We have enough fucking around, you think?
Yeah, I'm sure we do.
I really want that to be a movie. Enough fucking around!
That's the what's the plot of this movie?
Sorry, I just...
What's your elevator pitch? Go.
I'm so sorry, guess what I meant
who's
by that
the main
is,
character?
Yeah, who do you see in this role?
No, hold on, I'm gonna backtrack and restate, because I just had a better idea. It'll be Lee's stand-up
special.
Hang
on, I've got a phone call, I gotta take this. Keep going, though. I really want to hear this. Yeah? Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
It sounds great.
Look, actually,
don't call me. I'll call you.
Do you have anything with dogs, though? Because
yeah,
like, this new dog.
Yeah, the new CEO just got a dog, and he's really excited about it.
He loves dogs.
Can you do anything with kids? Because I got a son.
Gotta shut this little fucker up.
Yeah,
he's always going mine, mine, mine.
Johnny Depp wants to play a black person. Can you do anything with that?
Neverland. Welcome to Why Did We Watch This, aka Why Watch. On this week's episode, we are handling the horrendously 90s Steven Spielberg joint Hook, starring Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman. I myself am Brendan Bangarang Drischler.
I'm Chris Julia Roberts Wig Ravel.
I'm Lee Delahanty, and I didn't bother to think of a name for that.
Ooh, that's rough.
Zing.
I'm going to look up one of the Lost Boys insults and refer to you by that name for the rest of the podcast.
Like so, mucus butt or something. I don't know.
That's not one of them.
Don't ask.
Don't ask. I like it.
You can't. No, you can't do it.
Lee, don't ask. Don't tell Delahanty.
Lee, no.
Guys, do you think it was a gay reference? I think it was a gay reference.
Yeah. Let's apply queer theory to this movie.
Queery, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow. So the movie we picked to talk about today was Hook. And the drink that we made for Hook was called a pixie dust. The pixie dust, if anyone wants to chime in and help me talk about it.
Made with a vinique, which is a blend of Moscato and vodka along with fruit juices. What kind, I'm not sure, but I got a lot of strawberry. Mixed with a dry champagne.
Brut.
And a lime squeeze.
Brutal. It was very brutal.
Brutal.
That's some quality wordplay.
Oh, splash of lime.
Splash of lime. What did you guys think of the drink?
I liked it. It was a little on the sweet side for me.
I liked it okay.
It was, I'm all about champagne and champagne accessories.
Now that I know that, I know some great champagne cocktails we can drink.
Let's talk about them all right now.
Okay, anyway.
I'm going to be a strong advocate for champagne in all of our drinks.
I like it.
I thought it was a little much for me, actually. I didn't really like the vanille flavor of this one that much. I like they have a purple one. I like that better.
I honestly just couldn't tell you. You were the only two that got to taste the purple one without the champagne.
Right.
So I don't know how the different. I just know that the actual drink with the purple one, mm-hmm. I did not like.
Right, and we will forever be the only two who have drank this.
Yeah,
it is forbidden to you.
That stuff is like needlessly expensive for.
No, it is. It's a shame.
It looks gorgeous,
pretty, but it is like $20 a bottle.
Yeah. You can swirl it and it sparkles and it sort of looks acrylic. It's neat.
Yeah,
I love drinking now.
That's what I like to hear about things that I'm going to imbibe.
Put in your body.
That is like acrylic.
Yeah, it really tastes like it going down. I thought. Well, let's begin with the synopsis of Hook. I assume most people have probably seen this movie. Because a lot of us lived through the 90s. But, Chris, could you help us out by giving us a synopsis of the movie Hook?
I certainly could, especially because I feel like a lot of our listeners, if they're anywhere close to our age, had very faltering memories of this movie. So we start in on... we're essentially getting that Peter is a dick to his kids. He's answering chunky cell phones during plays, and he breaks promises to go to his son's baseball games. He's a very busy businessman, and the movie really hammers home the point that Peter, played by Robin Williams, is a classic 90s bad dad. He takes his kids, Jack and Maggie, to England for Christmas to spend with Granny Wendy, played by Maggie Smith. While at a benefit dinner to celebrate Wendy's new hospital for orphans, Hook shows up at Wendy's house to kidnap Peter's son and daughter. Peter, Wendy, and Peter's wife Moira rush home to find the children missing. While pacing around, Peter is accosted by Tinkerbell, played by Julia Roberts, who ends up carting Peter off to Neverland. Peter attempts to save his kids with a checkbook and predictably fails. Tinkerbell convinces Hook to spare Peter, and Peter ends up overboard. Some Technicolor mermaids bring him to shore, and Peter meets the Lost Boys in their camp, as well as their radical-to-death 90s leader Rufio, played by Dante Basco, the future voice of Last Airbender Zuko. Meanwhile, Hook attempts to make Peter's kids love him in a series of convoluted scenes too long to fully recap. Seeing this causes Peter to recall happy thoughts of his kids back at the Lost Boys camp, and he remembers how to fly as a result, thus completing his transformation into Peter Pan. Peter leads a very cutesy summer camp project style attack on Hook's ship. He realizes that Jack is literally dressed as a mini Hook. While Peter saves Maggie, Hook stabs Rufio, and Jack decides he wants to go home. Peter is taking his kids off the book when Hook taunts him back into a fight. Peter wins and is about to maybe kill him, but Jack and Maggie stop him. When Hook goes to kill Peter again, Peter contrives for Hook to stab the giant alligator-mounted clock in the town square, which then falls on Hook, somehow causing him to disappear. Peter leaves Neverland in the charge of the Lost Boys and returns to England, and the movie is very pleased with itself as Toodles, an elderly Lost Boy who lives with Wendy and is almost entirely incidental to the movie, flies off with fairy dust Peter brought back for him from Neverland. And that is the story.
That it is. Have you guys, when you guys were growing up, did you see this movie in theaters? Or were you familiar with it when you were kids at all?
I don't remember the context where I saw it.
But you did.
I definitely saw it.
Okay.
I don't, like I said, I've talked about how I only remember one scene, and I remember it incorrectly. I famously misremember one of the scenes.
I remembered a lot of it. A lot of it
but
was.
We're not going to tell you which one.
I mean, we'll get into it. We can get into it later, but like, it's very like it's again. It's the only significant memory that I have, so I will talk about
okay.
it. But I wanted to give space for Chris.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I remember parts of it. I definitely, as I was watching it, I was like, okay, parts of this are coming back to me, but like I remembered some stuff about the Lost Boys. I remembered some stuff about Hook and Jack. I weirdly remembered the prostitutes calling to Smee. But aside from that, I mean, I remember loving it as a kid, but I didn't have very coherent memories of it.
One of the things I will say that I remember more about not watching the movie, but like when the first wave of nostalgia hit.
Yeah.
And I remember all of a sudden, like everyone was like, oh, I remember Rufio. And I was like, no.
There's a band
no,
named
I
after
do not.
Him.
I don't know who, like, I did not remember, like, again, I knew what I liked then, I know what I like now, and I just filtered out. Like,
what I remember weirdly vividly is going to Emerson, like, when we were freshmen there, and within the first couple of months, I feel like I had seen Hook on DVD about three times with different people,
yeah.
because they really enjoyed it. I don't remember, I must have seen this as a kid, like, probably not in theaters, but on TV or on VHS. But I have no firm memory. Like, much like Peter returning back to our world, I have repressed all my memories of Neverland.
I could name two or three of our close friends who I guarantee you probably showed it to you on DVD.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
I think I know exactly. It'll come back to you.
Please.
It was probably the same people that was going on about Rufio that I was like,
I did a little bit of kind of like casual polling with some people that I knew and being like, do you remember this movie and what do you remember from it? And it is such a thing with people around our age do have very positive memories of it. I will say about half of them said they loved it as kids, but like reflecting upon it as adults, they're like, that movie was not good. Take for that what you will. But I just thought that was so interesting that this movie that is very much about childhood versus adulthood, people do have these very mixed feelings about it.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of nostalgia for this movie, which I myself don't quite get. And maybe I would feel differently if it was a beloved movie that I had watched many times as a child. But since that's not my situation...
Did you not see... You saw it as a kid.
I feel, again, like I said, I think I must have seen it.
You do Peter Panned it out.
Yeah, but I totally Peter Panned it. Like, I don't remember ever watching it, but, like, I feel like the first time I saw it later on as an adult, I was like, oh, yeah, this is familiar. I remember all this shit. When
you
I was...
went to, like, Peter Pan? Like, for example, like, the Disney movie was also really big.
I mean, I own... My parents had that on VHS.
Like, yeah,
I knew Peter Pan.
Like, I'd seen the Disney movie a ton
as
a kid.
So had I. Yeah, I have a lot of affection for the story of Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Like, it's really...
It's same. Like, it was one of the characters that I would latch on to. Like, I probably was Peter Pan for Halloween at one point.
Mary Martin.
Yeah, I was Mary Martin.
You slipped the hair back.
I mean, I think so I was all of the green characters. Like, I was Robin Hood at one point. Like,
you're just repurposing the same costume.
The same tunic.
That was probably a part
Luigi.
Of it. No, fuck Luigi.
I mean, Roger.
I mean, to defend you, I've done that as an adult. I think for the past, like, 3 or 4 years, I've waffled between Robin Hood and Peter Pan because I have the same green tunic.
Yeah, that's because you're lazy,
kid, though. It was like, also, these are the characters I want to be.
Because it got the red hair.
What? I don't think...
They don't have to have red hair.
But that's, I mean, I don't know.
That's your baggage.
Yeah, anyhow.
My Peter Pan is dark Irish.
Baggage.
Yeah, anywho. The amount of affection this movie has with people our age is sort of surprising to me. I remember talking to people about watching this movie and how I considered it to be pretty terrible. And people were sort of shocked, I think, that we were coming to this conclusion about it. And I don't know if it's because maybe they haven't seen it in the past couple of years, or maybe they just are not very judgmental, which is possible. I'm a very judgmental person.
I don't want to go too far down this train of thought, but, like, yeah. I've talked to, like, other film analysis-minded people
yeah.
Who would agree that it's not a good movie. And I've talked to, like, people that just watch movies for fun or because they want to be entertained or escape. Yeah. That are like, it's great.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it might be, like, what you're looking for
that's,
in this movie.
That's
like,
certainly possible. And it's also sort of interesting to note that Steven Spielberg himself does not think this is a very good movie.
Although I did find it interesting how that perspective transformed. And I think maybe it just took him, much like us as adults, it took us time to look back on it later to kind of notice its flaws. Because at the time, he was very supportive of it. And then later, he was like, well, I did parts of it well, and then... I think as recent as, like, 2013, he was like, the movie's garbage and I can't stand it. It is very much love it or hate it. And I find myself in the half-breed camp where I both acknowledge it's not a good movie, but I am immensely entertained by it. But I found it very charming despite its huge flaws.
So, Lee, I think you and I have similar thoughts on
how we feel about this movie. I feel that it is less watchable every time I watch it.
Like, right.
Every time I watch it, I
run out of patience.
I find more and more that I can't deal with. But, like, what I would say that a lot of it, a good part of it is just the fact that it was made in the 90s. And I feel like some movies that were made in the 90s, like, I can still watch in the 80s and the 70s, and I watch silver screen movies all the time. But, like, we all know that, like, acting methods changed and film methods changed. And, like, in the 90s, it was very common to put, like, a very on-the-nose...
Everything.
With lyric song during, like, romantic comedies, like, for what the characters are going through. And, like, you just, when you accept it now, but if you did that nowadays, you'd be like, it would be terrible, it would be cheesy, and it would be wrong.
There's also a training montage.
Yeah, there's, like, in the it's full of all the 90s things, like the training montage, and, like, the bad dad stuff, like the baseball game that he misses.
Yeah, this movie is a movie that is drenched in the early 90s. Make no mistake, this is very much a product of its time. Like we were saying, Peter Banning is a very 90s bad dad. Like, mm-hmm. he's a bad dad, he loves business too much, and he's always talking on his large cell phone, and he never attends his son's baseball games, which I think were, like, the requirements on the checklist of bad dads in the 90s.
And, like, all the lines about it are so on the nose too, where it's like you promise, my word is my bond, like, I'll do 6 games next year, son, I promise. And then, like, in the end, like, there has to be a moment where the action stops so that every character can go, I believe in you.
Right.
Like, it's so ridiculous.
By the way, and this just occurred to me when you were saying the whole my word is my bond thing, they had him say that a few times in the beginning. I don't think that came back.
No, it didn't.
But they really put a lot of emphasis on it. I'm surprised. Anyway, it was a moment I kind of loved, even though it wasn't good, was his wife kind of storms into the room when he's talking on his cell phone yet again, and she's saying something to the effect of, like, hang it up, your kids love you. And he's like, he, like, pulls out the antenna really slowly and goes back to talking.
Well, he also says, like, I have to fix this. And she says, you have to fix your family first.
It was very Lifetime.
Like, sick burns. Sick burns, Moira. Speaking of, like, sort of things that do work in this movie, I have a lot of I have a lot of affection, I think, for the sequences in mm-hmm. London. The house, like, it's a very 90s house that Wendy's lives. Like, it's the sort of, like, house you see at Christmas in a 90s movie. Mm-hmm. It's like Kevin McAllister goes London,
basically. Yeah.
And it's like a very, like, pleasant feeling for me to look at that house and be like, what a nice place to live this must be. And you also have Dame Maggie Smith as Wendy, who is in for, like, what, like, maybe 7 minutes or so, but she nails it.
She's great.
What I think the movie nails in general is the way that Peter behaves around Wendy, both before and after.
Yeah.
Even in the first time that they see each other in this movie, when he walks in the house, this, like, from what we've seen, asshole guy, like, sort of freezes and like looks up kind of reverentially as like she comes down the stairs, and it's like and he's like he like remembers like
the like, little thing she goes hello boy and,
Hello, like he like there's still that part of him that always knows that like Wendy is like special.
Yeah. That is really the strongest relationship that Peter has in this movie is with Wendy. There's, like we had sort of mentioned while watching it, he decides to leave Neverland because he sees Moira lying in her bed. And he makes this flash of the, like, this impulsive decision just because he saw this girl lying in bed and says, I'm going to give her a kiss. And he decides to stay there. But he's never...
Well, it's because, like, Wendy's like, oh, I'm too old because she's middle-aged.
But take this one. She's just like me, but younger.
She says, like, no, don't take... Moira, because I don't want her to go through
the heartbreak
that I went through. And then he's like, okay, well, I'll just give her a real kiss because I decided that just now that I'm in love with a sleeping woman.
Yeah.
It's both. Who's
and Wendy's okay with it. Wendy's chill with him.
She loves it.
For the record, I guess, she's not, like, okay with it, but she just kind of stands there.
No, she does. She doesn't say, like, no, back out the window, kid.
Yeah. She's just, like, she doesn't know what to do with this. Like, I think she's, the audience. Like, what is happening right now? Like, did he just decide to kiss some random girl and I was going to stay here forever?
That part felt really rushed. Like, they're like...
It was done.
It is. There's very little...
He's like, we need to web this up.
There's very little screen time with Moira, frankly. There's not a whole lot of...
The woman who he made the decision to give up immortality for, it's not explained very well what the selling point was.
Well, and like Brendan just alluded to, they don't give her much to do or say. She gets one speech that begins out really hacky where she's like, you need to fix your family. But then she does get a few good lines later when she's like, your children love you, take this time when they actually want to play with you before it's going to be later when you're going to be chasing after them for affection. I actually thought that part was nicely
written. I liked that line, those couple of lines. Speaking just sort of Wendy, there's something about this movie that bugs me a lot, and I've talked about this with Lee. It really annoys me that in this adaptation, in this pseudo-sequel to Peter Pan, the story Peter Pan is something that exists in universe here. Yeah,
that was confusing.
So it bugs me. It's not even. It's so.
Well, I think the way they explained it right is that Wendy writes down all this.
She says something that like their next door neighbor was J.M. Barrie, mm-hmm. and Wendy would tell these stories about Peter Pan, and J.M. Barrie wrote that down. But if J.M. Barrie exists, what happened to like those five brothers that he was telling? He made up these stories and told them to. Also, if you are Peter Pan and you decide to leave Neverland, he forgets everything, and I could probably buy that, but he's been inundated his entire life with the fictional adventures of a character named Peter Pan, and at no point does that ever cause him to be like, this is ringing a bell, but I can't quite figure out why. Like, if I had forgotten everything prior to me being 12, but I was hearing stories about this kid named Brendan Pan who lived in Neverland and fought pirates, I'd be like... There's just something about this that I can't quite put my finger on, but it comes to me. So it just, it annoys me that it's there. Like, it's a very strange choice, and I don't think it adds anything for there to be an in-universe story about Peter Pan. I think you could
cut it without losing anything. It's right. The story isn't reliant on this.
Well, yeah.
And no, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I think probably the answer is magic, but it's not explained. I think, like...
Yeah.
If I had to guess that it's so powerful that, like, the reason he doesn't remember Neverland is because some magical... There's, like, a magical misremembering.
Right, I assume like, the reverse of, like, how when you go to Neverland, they say that, like, Jack starts to forget about his dad. So it's, like, the reverse. Like, the more time you spend on Earth,
There is, for example, stuff about Peter Pan, like, even in Neverland, doesn't remember his adventures because then he wouldn't be able to have them again.
Right.
So, like, it's part of his character historically.
Wouldn't it have been nice if they established that movie?
It technically J.M. Barrie established it, but it's not like they expect the audience to... like you can expect the audience to have read, you know, all the stuff that J.M. Barrie wrote before he goes to this movie.
There's a lot of weird inconsistencies with how Peter Pan acts when he's back in Neverland, too. How he sort of drifts between remembering his kids and forgetting about his kids.
This is my big problem with the movie.
Yeah.
My big problem with the movie is how, like, it's very unclear what he remembers, what he doesn't remember when he first gets there. But then when he gains the ability to fly again, it is literally because he, like, remembers who he is. And he says, oh my god, my happy thought is that I have kids. And then it's like, boop, 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 and he's a big transformation. He's suddenly Peter Pan again.
Pointy ears and all.
Yeah, and then, like, after a jaunty flight, he comes back, and he's, like, talking to Tinkerbell, and she's like, okay, we're gonna get your kids, and he says, what kids? I'm like, the kids that are the reason you can fucking fly again, you idiot.
Yeah.
And it's weird, because then are they asking us in that moment that that was the catalyst, and then it completely flew out of his head?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that I think that makes sense. I think that Peter Pan as an eternal child, like, if you're gonna become Peter Pan again, then that means you revert. Like, you can't... you can't take all the baggage of being a middle-aged person with you into being Peter Pan.
You can take the body, though.
You can't. Well, yeah, I don't. That's another point of order that I wanted. I don't think that he should have the body of it because it just looks. There's no way it looks weird. It doesn't look weird, right? Like,
no, it does.
For Robin Williams to be wearing a green tunic and tights, there's no way it looks heroic or dashing. It just looks a bit like old. It's the reverse of
no. It's like
suits,
dad taking his kids out for trick or treat. She wants to be Tinkerbell really bad, so he's like, "Okay, honey."
It's not like he transforms into Peter Pan and suddenly you see this cool looking hero. It's just Robin Williams with weird ears and
gelled hair.
Yeah,
I will say though, I think tunic. Robin Williams sells it as best as anyone could. In this situation.
I don't know. I don't think it's his fault I have a problem with it. I think that he just was never right for this character.
No, well. I think there's a problem for me with Peter Banning being looked on, he's looked on as sort of, I don't know, blustering and ineffective and sort of just, I don't know, focused on work. But I think really Peter should just be sort of meek and socially awkward.
Yeah.
He should just be sort of he's pushing his glasses up his nose all the time. He's every time he's trying to say something to anyone. And it just, to me, that feels more of a contrast between Peter Pan, this cocky little shit, and Peter Panning, this adult who is,
I don't know that I would go that particular, but I think he should just be joyless and without mirth and possibly slightly depressed. I feel the real world has beaten him down. I think my sort of canon take on him growing up would be that if he made this decision right to stay and very quickly was oh, this sucks, and he because again being you can't be an eternal child in the real world, so he found that he was unable to do it, and so the reason he forgets everything is because that's the only way that he could move on was to give up all of it. So he did, he gave up all of it. And because he did, he just sort of became this sort of downtrodden husk of a person.
What got me, and kind of going in that same direction, is that this movie.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Oh God,
you good?
Yeah, no, I saw this movie twice in 24 hours, and it made me feel.
It made you feel sick.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's all right. This movie really gets at some stuff that, for my taste, was maybe a little dark for aiming at kids in the 90s. The thing that just got me about that was, and I wondered when I was first watching it, I was like, God, was Spielberg working something out? And apparently he was. He was basing the Peter Banning character off his own father. And I was like, okay, so of course this is me inconsistent and weird, because if you can't, he's probably not looking at it, with a clear head. He's coming into it with a lot of complicated emotions, understandably.
My understanding, though, also was at the time Spielberg was even doubtful about how well he was pulling this off. I don't think he was never caught. There's a quote in the newspaper or something where he said something he comes into work every day and he's like, "Ooh, have we gone too far?" or something like that.
Yes.
Has my reach exceeded its grasp?
Well, because he also said at one point, he's like, "I wish I could do it again when I wasn't just ordering humongous real sets and painting trees red." And I was good point, because it does seem like a theme park.
Yeah, there's a choice, and it's potentially an interesting choice to do everything in studio and to build your sets entirely. It allows you a lot of creative freedom, obviously, and I'm sure that's what they were going for. And if the movie Popeye taught us everything, it's that you don't really want to shoot in a bay somewhere, because you're just asking for trouble. But
I mean, they chose that's a bad, terrible location.
Yeah, no, it is too. But still, you don't want to have to literally shoot a pirate ship in the middle of off the coast and plan your entire shot around. It's messy. You're at the behest of the weather. It's just not going to work. But contrary-wise, the sets in this movie are very theme parky. It looks like something out of Disney World for the most part.
They're very overstuffed and overdesigned. And I would always look at them and I would feel delighted by different details I would see. And you guys, saw me. I was pointing at things oh, look. The, rungs on the balustrade on that pirate ship is just Captain Hook's head over and over and over. I'm like, that's kind of a cool idea. But that's on, every inch of everything.
I think I describe it as subscribing to the Star Wars very dense.
Yeah, every frame.
Every frame is so dense.
Packed.
Philosophy. So dense. And I don't really agree with that. I feel forests aren't that hard. You can shoot in a real forest.
Yeah.
It looks like such a fake forest.
And the other, yeah. It felt so small, too. Like, I'm sure these were very big sets, but I didn't have a very good sense of scale for a lot of them.
They don't show you enough.
Yeah, and so, I didn't see, that's the thing. I didn't see how one thing connected to the other, because I probably couldn't, because, they were shooting in a different soundstage for that part of it.
Yeah.
But it's just, Neverland alternatively feels like an island. Like, whenever they show wide shots, I'm like, okay, it's clearly an island. But whenever they're actually on the soundstages, of which there are really only two major soundstage, sets, there's, where the pirates live and where the Lost Boys live. And it feels like all of that could be condensed to the Boston Gardens or something. that Neverland is not that big at the end of the day, which is really detrimental.
And it also seemed like I would have loved for the pirates to cast off and done anything on their ship, but it always just hung out in harbor. On the note of you saying that everything felt kind of closed in and claustrophobic, you were pointing out, Brendan, when we were watching it, that when Peter goes overboard and lands in the water and he's getting kissed by mermaids, it just looks like a swimming pool that someone painted with water refraction.
It is. You can see a wall at one point that has been painted with water refraction. There's a wall. There's no two ways around it.
So you're right. It does feel very closed in, especially for a movie that is about flight and a movie that's supposed to be about breaking out of stricture and kind of having a big adventure. It feels very bound in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I discussed how Superman, a movie made much, much earlier, made flight look a lot more exciting and fun.
Yes.
Than...
Yeah, there's not really... The scene where he first flies is not that fun.
No,
am I right?
It's dull looking. The shots are very static.
Yeah.
And he's not moving very fast across the frame, so it looks dull and slow and
Yeah.
It sort of looks like dream walking. You know how sometimes in dreams you want to go faster and you can't?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looks like when he's running to the... He's, fly running.
That looked bad.
I know. Yeah. It looks like he, wants to go faster, but there's something stopping him.
The Lost Boys, in general, are perhaps the most obvious 90s thing in this movie, I might say. Every single one of them looks like Steven Spielberg just drove a car outside of the All That auditions and was all right, you, get on in. We're making Hook. Come
Some
on.
Some of you put on newsboy caps.
Yeah. Incidentally, the thud butt, there's
is it I'm sorry,
what
is it, not mud butt?
No, it's thud
butt. Butt.
What?
Mud butt is probably too suggestive
because he's fat.
Oh, I guess you're,
because he's gonna fall and he's fat and it'll go thud.
It's get offensive
it?
Either way.
No, it's stupid. But the scene where he curls himself up into a cannonball and rolls down the gangplank, if you look online, you can see pictures of the foam rubber thud butt that they used for that scene. It's terrifying. It has held up about as well as the movie has.
I feel like you could have a championship match against Bruce, the animatronic shark from Jaws.
Oh, I was going to say it should be against the exploding Mr. Big from Live and Let Die.
They do kind of sort of, at the end, reference his weight without it seeming that offensive. When
I
don't think that was intentional.
At the beginning, when he first shows up, they're like, about Peter Pan.
And they're like,
Peter
so fat.
Pan, and they're like, oh, he got all fat. And then Thudbutt says, not so fat to
and
me.
And he does this weird little sassy strut thing when he's doing, shaking his shoulders.
Not so fat to me. And the other kid, I hate worst of all is when he says, he's a fat old grandpa man. It's not necessarily they call him fat.
Yeah, they don't call Thudbutt fat.
It's just his name.
Yeah.
They just named him.
His name is just Thudbutt.
I don't know how people arrive at those names, because that one kid's name is Don't Ask.
Yeah, Don't Ask.
I feel like that they come up with their own names, and if that's the case, then this kid just chose Thudbutt. That's how he wants to be known.
Yeah.
Maybe it's he's making it work for him. It's
he's reclaiming it?
Yeah, he's reappropriating the name Thudbutt.
It did also seem like they were trying to push this kind of the Lord of the Flies angle. And they do call that out at one point. Peter says, what is this, the preschool, or the Lord of the Flies preschool, or something like that. So I guess that would kind of explain their weird tribal names, but they're still dumb.
Well, I mean, Lost Boys always have names. They've always had names. Toodles, you see.
Nibs.
Nibs, yeah. Curly.
The twins.
I
feel like that's in one category, and then names like Thudbutt and Don't Ask are...
It's part of the re-bringing it into the 90s. Yeah. They have to have,
No, honestly, I would say Don't Ask feels like it could have been something in Barry. Because
Don't Ask could have been...
Isn't there one called Slightly or something, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's, a name that, it's a universal orphan type name.
I feel like in my head the story is just that like one of the Lost Boys was like, "What's your name?" He's like, "Don't ask."
Yeah,
and it just sort of became a thing.
Like his brother or one of the other Lost Boys, if you don't know, like there'd be all these different like. So some of those names are fine. I think the other
it's just when you get to Thudbutt territory,
like Rufio. Is that a real name?
Yeah, how did they come up with that?
Anything's a real name if you want it to be.
That was definitely Steven Spielberg, like, asked one of his kids, like, do you know any, like, punk kids at your school? Can you show me who they like in bands? And then he saw the picture and was like, we're going to do that hair, but bigger. And instead of paper clips hanging out on his black ripped vest, it's going to be little bones.
Where'd you get the hair dye?
I don't know. Where did they get the weird dye for the mud pit? And
well,
the
I mean, it's all like it's the imagination.
Yeah, it
imagination.
It's a really the whole food fight is a really unsettling. We were talking about this the other night, but like as a kid, and I'll accept the fact that I was just like a prissy little shit when I was a kid, but I never wanted to have a food fight. Like it was just simply never something that I felt would be like a fun thing.
I've always been a messy slob. But I don't know. Like I want to eat food.
Yeah, food is for eating, not for throwing.
I would
especially
also...
when it like looks like gack.
Yeah, and I also don't want to, like, get mess on me. Like, that's generally why I don't want to start any kind of a fight, like, a snowball. Because, like, I know that if I start, like, I'm subjecting myself to getting hit by it. Yeah. I don't want to, so.
Well, and
if I could get a sneaky shot off, I might do it.
But you're so right. I never thought about it, but that's another thing when I was little, too, and I would see these kids' movies in the 90s. And TV shows, and they would include a lot of food fights, and I would just sort of tune them out because I'm like, I don't want this.
Yeah, they'd always be preceded by someone going food fight.
Do you think food fights like ever actually happen, or is it like a Welfare Queens thing where it just became like a rumor that someone started?
You mean like Reagan said the words "food fight" in a speech, and then we ran with it?
That's right.
A culture?
No, he was sitting at home with Nancy, and he said, "It's a food fight, mommy," and lobbed his boiled celery.
I asked a bunch of people if they remembered the food fight thing, because that really stuck out in my head on watching it as an adult. And
Technicolor food.
It was just, like, dyed frosting, which was weird, but...
Was it meant to be, like, cream pies?
I don't think it was, like...
I think it's just supposed to be, like, the stuff of imagination.
Yeah.
Well, because there was real food.
Right, that's the weirdest thing, too. Like, if it was all multicolored goo, I would probably be like, well, it's disgusting,
yeah,
but okay?
There was
but the
real
fact
fruit.
That there's, like, chicken... And, like, cheese with Thudbutt's face on it.
There were onions and stuff,
yeah,
too. There were onions and vegetables.
That's true.
I think that the whipped cream stuff was just abounding.
Yeah.
Because it was a feast. And I think it was the dessert. I think they were, like, meant to be, like, different cream pies.
But, like, it's just, like...
They were all
because
they were all
just
circular.
A thing.
Most of them were all circular. I think they were meant to be, like...
That's true. And it sort of looked like when Peter scoops it out of a bowl at one point, I for a second thought it kind of looked like rainbow sherbet. But I asked people what they felt about that now, and I got a kind of another 50-50 response where people either thought it was totally disgusting, or some other people remembered it very fondly and said, like, it made me feel, you know, good inside, and it was fun and light. And I kind of get it both ways. Like, I mean,
I do not. To each his own.
I don't, no, but I'm saying, like, I don't really care for it generally, but it did sort of be like, aw, how I felt as a kid watching movies. That was great.
I want to talk a little bit more about the actors. Is it fair to say that we all like Dustin Hoffman?
Yes.
Lee?
Yeah, I have no problem with him.
He was very good. I liked his choices. The only issue I have is the issue I have with a lot of portrayals of Captain Hook in media, where Captain Hook is supposed to... In the source material, Captain Hook is sort of a creepy guy. He is afraid of this crocodile. But, you know, at no point is he not supposed to be viewed as a threat. But I think starting with the Disney Peter Pan for the most part, or maybe even the Broadway one, because the Broadway is so steeped in sort of pantomime traditions, Captain Hook has sort of been a funny villain. Like,
yeah,
he's supposed to be scary, but he's also kind of a goofball.
Foppish.
And, well, I would describe it as, like, he's got clear weak points, and he's, like, he's easily sort of buffoonized, right? Like,
yeah.
The crocodile shows up and he's like, "Smee!"
Yeah, he's
like,
starts climbing up Smee. Yeah,
yeah, like he's you see with the weakness and like you're able to laugh at him just as often as you're able to be scared by him. I think
I'll say the material that Dustin Hoffman was given was probably just okay, but I think he knocked it out of the park. I thought he chewed the scenery in a way I was loving.
I mean, he stone cold kills a kid.
Yeah,
yes.
But he also seems genuinely pleased by Jack getting a home run.
Yeah, he does. So he has a heart.
Yeah, he has a heart, but he also hearts out.
Yeah, it's his entire plan is a weird plan to me, because in theory, the idea of wanting to brainwash your opponent's kids into loving you is sort of terrifying from, like, the perspective of an adult. Like, yeah. From the perspective of Peter Pan, it's a scary thing. But when you look at it, really what he's doing is he's trying to be best friends with his nemesis's kids.
Well, yeah, I feel like
which is just, like, a goofy thing to have your villain's plot be. And Captain Hook is also... He's going through a lot of weird shit at this point, I think it's fair to say, psychologically.
A midlife crisis?
He tries to kill... He sort of says that he's going to kill himself, but he just wants the attention, I think.
He's being a drama queen.
Yeah, he's... Yeah.
Which Smee just sort of tells him right out, doesn't he?
He just kind of says, like, oh, it's fine, you're just tired. Or something. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't, like... I think he's not necessarily calling his boss out. I think he's just trying to appease his boss.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that he doesn't take the threat. He rightly does not take the threat.
Right, because he just sits
seriously.
There, like, Hook has the gun pointed in his head. Smee's just sort of staring at him, being like,
yeah,
okay, what's going
to
happen?
I think Smee is, like, a smart enough character to be like, yeah, you're not really going to kill yourself.
Yeah.
Until he's like, you have to stop me. And he's like, oh, okay. Like,
see, here's the thing with that, though. I feel like the plot of villain really gets to hero by bringing his kids to his side, I actually think that's a really interesting idea that could have been done really well. It just wasn't in this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
I don't know.
Think about it, like, that on paper, that is a huge mind fuck.
I was going to make a joke about universal reconciliation.
Ooh.
But I couldn't think of the term in time, but I just remembered it. But it's similar to that, right? That, like, no person can be evil forever. Eventually they'll say that,
right.
Like, this plot line can't be always terrible.
Exactly. It has to hit a turning point.
Similar. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's, like, I think it's always hackneyed when you make that choice. I think it's similar to, like, how if you tell me that, like, a character gets amnesia, you're going to really have to, like... I mean, when I was a kid, I will admit, I ate amnesia up.
Mm-hmm.
But... nowadays, when you're like, oh, and then the character gets amnesia, and it's like, sign me up for all the amnesia bullshit. Or, like, when a character time travels, and then there's, like, no, sorry, if they're from the past, then you get all the scenes of, like, oh, TV,
who's
the
wizard
in
a box? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, less done, but it's kind
and
of...
If, yeah, and if they're from the future, then you get all the, like, oh, let's talk about the Beatles.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not a band yet. Oh, like... So when you do the whole, like, I'm gonna brainwash the kid into being on my side, it's always, like, I'm gonna give him a toy...
Yeah.
And then we're gonna believe, like, it becomes like, oh, kids just want toys, and as soon as,
yeah,
like, some other person gives them things, they'll be like, they'll start to be swayed over.
It's very material based, although I will say it doesn't do it well, but this movie does make a case that Hook is applying some kind of emotional validation.
No, it's done better than
Jack was crying out for.
Yeah, I mean, it's done,
yeah,
far better than in The Lone Ranger, because, like, it's not just that he takes Jack out for a fun cock smashing session, he also,
yeah,
like, claps when he gets a home run.
Right,
like,
he stays for the game. He, like, supports him.
Yeah,
he pays attention to him.
He whips all of his pirates into shape to put on this whole game for,
yeah,
him.
We,
yeah,
we were saying how these pirates,
it's
somehow
sweet,
managed to assemble an entire baseball diamond and all these uniforms in the span of about 2 days, I think.
Yeah. I had completely forgotten about that scene.
That's a loving father.
Like, gosh. I had completely forgotten about that scene entirely until when I rewatched it, I was like, what the fuck is happening? But I agree. I actually had a moment where I was like, that's actually genuinely sweet.
Well, I don't think that they went this way, but I feel like it would be a short hop to the plot line where Hook takes it too far, and it, like, it's that plot line where, like, you, like, the guy's like, oh, I'm gonna get the girl by pretending I like her, and then he falls in love with her, like the con man,
right,
thing. Like, I feel like that could very easily have been Hook wants to brainwash the kid, but then really just wants the kid as his own son.
He just has, like, this, like, a soliloquy where he's like, now I understand love.
Yeah.
All this time I was brainwashed.
I feel like that's sort of what's happening, and we're just not getting the full story of it.
The clouds part, a ray of light shines upon him in this epiphany.
There's something, like, fairly interesting about the idea, too, that, like, if Hook were genuinely emotionally invested, like, because this is a character who's having some sort of eternal midlife crisis, apparently, now that Peter,
yeah,
Pan has gone, Neverland is stagnant, and he has nothing to live for, and so the idea that maybe he sees this kid as, like, something to live for is sort of interesting, and maybe he sees it as, like, a legacy, and maybe he's like, you know, like, I don't know what I'm doing anymore, but I have this kid who will carry on my name, and he'll be, like, a great pirate too, and this is wonderful for me, but you don't,
yeah,
get any of that, because I don't think that's what his intention is.
I mean, there's an alt universe here where Peter Banning, like, dies. And the kid just grows up, and, like, Hook is, they have, like, a nice, it's not an entirely bleak future, where, like,
yeah,
he is raised by Captain Hook, and Captain Hook, by all intents and purposes,
is a loving father.
A pretty decent guy to him.
One of my main criticisms with that whole, I'm gonna make the kids love me plotline, is that it zeroes in so quickly on Jack the son and completely forgets about Maggie the daughter immediately.
Yeah, Maggie's an afterthought for most of this movie.
For most of this movie, because...
Well, because he gives up on her pretty quickly, because she's like, just, I like mommy! I want to go home! And he's like, ah, oh, fuck you, and he puts her back in the cage.
The thing that does it, I don't know why it bugs me so much, but it does. Whenever he's trying, whenever, like, Hook has them in the net, and... Peter's trying to reach them, and Maggie says, "Mommy could do it, Daddy." And I just want to be like, "You little shits! Like, fuck you! You don't deserve to be rescued at this point. It's like, way to guilt your father."
Because I was like, "That's probably not true."
I don't know. I feel like that could be right.
Yeah, Mommy's a little more competent than Daddy. I think
Mommy is more competent, and she probably is. I'm not like I'm saying she loves the kids more, but like I feel like she would be more on the line. She would like go balls out. I think that Peter is a character who. Like, just has forgotten to take that leap. Like, I feel like Moira would have gone savage.
I agree. She would have, gone tooth and nail.
Yeah.
Peter has a very dumb reaction in general when he shows up to Neverland. And he's just been taken there by a fairy who, you know, and Wendy has just told him previously, by the way, that Peter Pan kid you've read about, well, he's you. And then he shows up in Neverland, and his first reaction when he sees Hook is to be like, I'll get a lawyer, and I'm going to lawyer up, and you better find a good lawyer too, Captain Hook, and I'll write you a check for my kids. Like,
It's bizarre.
It's the 90s philosophy of storytelling and filmmaking where
someone's
like,
someone's got to sue.
We got to make these cheesy jokes because they have to be made because it's the 90s, but like, it's, you can't fathom that a character, he went to college.
Yeah.
He can't, like, you're an adult and you're smart. You can, like, realize that you're now in a different universe.
Yeah, the rules have changed. And you just come off as an idiot.
Yeah.
Well, and he is physically in that world, and still the memories do not come back.
Yeah, it takes a very, like, one of the biggest problems with this movie is that it is, again, like, close to 2.5 hours long, and it takes such a long time for anything to happen. This movie could have been well under 2 hours and gotten everything across much quicker. It is just such a goddamn slog.
I'm wondering, as a sidebar, if that's going to become a thing we're going to realize going forward, because I had the same complaint about Lone Ranger, and I wonder if... A lot of the movies we are going to be watching are going to be overlong.
I don't think that's always going to be the thing. It's a frequent problem of bad movies, I think, that they sometimes can go too long. But I think that, like, some other famously bad movies are short and still terrible.
Yeah.
They
can
just feel like outright. Like, the Cassandra Bullock crossword puzzle lady.
All About Steve.
Oh, yeah. My God.
I'm pretty sure that's very short.
It is, but it's all relative.
It's all relative.
As Nathan Lane once sang in The Nutcracker.
Oh, my God.
It's all relative.
It's all relative.
I don't want to go down that road if I don't have to. But yeah, you see the daughter again when she sings an original song on the deck of it, or not original song, I don't even know, but sings a song on the deck of a ship, and Peter hears her, and then she pops up again at the very end, and that's it.
Well, back to Peter Pan's, like, remembering status, there's that weird window where it's between where he can imagine food into existence, but he still doesn't know that he's Peter Pan yet.
Yeah.
But he does this, so he's accepted something, and then it takes, like, a couple more scenes where he, like, sees his son at a baseball game, and then he comes back and he's desperately trying to fly before he has the full, like, flashback, oh my God, I am Peter Pan moment. But, like, what happens? Like, what does he know at that point, then, from the point that he can, make food real?
Yeah.
I think it was just
again,
a weird,
it's
like,
extraneous.
But it's like
so long.
It just, maybe it was, like, a plot necessity. They're like, we need to put off this revelation as long as possible.
Maybe.
It's like 70 minutes in.
I know.
I think it's done in service of this plot, which I don't like, which is that I think the movie focuses too much on he's a bad dad versus he's Peter Pan. Like, there's two things going on. He's a bad dad, and there's also he's Peter Pan, and he's forgotten how to be a child. And I think that you needed to pick one or the other, and if you did pick the bad dad one, then it's no longer a Peter Pan movie.
Peter Pan would be a horrible dad.
He would. I mean, I'm not saying that, but I don't think that he would be a bad dad for the same reason.
I mean, Peter Pan as a 12-year-old would be a bad dad.
Yeah,
for sure, because he's selfish.
Because he's a little shit.
There's a lot to suggest that he doesn't let the Lost Boys fly. Like, he could, but he doesn't want to because he wants to be the one that flies.
Although
he's Peter Pan,
even though it was weird and he forgets about his kids and that was.
No, I think that's correct.
I agree that it was correct, but it was that was a moment where I was like, I'm processing this.
Yeah.
I was just so happy that the movie finally lets Robin Williams take the muzzle off.
Yeah.
Because through much of this movie, he's so restrained, he's very mannered, and the only, like, dynamic stuff you get out of him is a little slapstick and a lot of yelling.
It's not like he can't do restrains, though, because again, yeah, I would argue that 1 hour photo was good.
No, but it's,
I've seen him absolutely. Do it well. It's just, I just don't think he's good in this.
I don't think that he could. I don't think muzzle on or off. I want Robin Williams as Peter Pan.
He's just not a Peter Pan to me. Peter Pan is not like a manic, jumpy child.
Well,
he's,
yeah, I think, but like Robin Williams does a very good like innocent,
yeah,
like, pathos filled child character, yeah, like Toys. I would. I'm sorry, but I'm saying the character he plays in Toys is the symbolic, like, innocence of childhood.
Yeah, it's
joy,
a good sense
fun.
Of, like, childlike
but,
anger.
Like, everyone, I want everyone to have fun, and I want to be really good to my sister, who's right. also maybe a robot, I don't know. But, like, he's good to everyone, whereas this Peter Pan is more like, I want to have adventures, and I want to kill pirates, and I'm the best, and I can fly, and I'm going to have lost boys, it'd be great. And then the next day he forgets, like, what happened the day before, like...
Completely,
because it's a new day and he wants to have new adventures. It's different aspects of childhood.
Yeah.
And they kind of, like, try to stab back at the classic Peter character close to the end, where Hook says something along the lines of, like, I'm going to kill you or you're going to die or whatever. And...
They're both lines that have been spoken before, by
the way. Yeah, die would be an awfully big adventure.
Yeah, exactly. And Hook has already said earlier in the movie that death is the only adventure I have left.
Yeah.
Which has a great line.
It's amazing. Like it, yeah.
It's a solid
there are actually, yeah. There are some great lines in this movie.
There's a few good lines.
But they rush through...
Have they all been cribbed from the actual source material?
Probably.
No, what was the one I liked towards the end? I can't remember. Something that the...
I want you to protect anyone smaller than you.
Protect anyone smaller than you. I thought that was really, like...
Yeah, when he's handing the sword off to Thudbutt.
Yeah, that one, that's, like, the only moment of the movie that I got a little teary-eyed was because, like, that's just a nice sentiment. Like,
it was a great sentiment. But I also thought that they rushed through that whole... You know, death would be a great adventure. They rush through that exchange. They practically mumble it, which is bizarre.
The movie had already gone on for far too long.
Yeah, it was so long, and we'd already stopped the fight and started the fight again. Yeah. We just need to end it.
At like three times, they stopped and started.
Yeah, it's a weird fight for me at the end too. I have a lot of problems with the crocodile clock thing throughout the movie. It perplexed me to no end, and it still does to this day, that Hook thrusts his hook into the crocodile. The crocodile growls, looks down at him, and then falls down, and then Hook disappears.
But not before saying. What does this mean?
What does this? When he thrusts his hook and he says, "What's happening? What does this mean?" Which is the same question that we asked ourselves while we were watching it.
And then, right before the crocodile falls on him, he screams out, "I want my mommy!"
Yeah, pathos. But I don't know what happened. Like, is he? He's gone, I guess. But like, was he eaten by the hollow crocodile? Like.
I don't know.
Am I asking too much to want to know what the deal is?
I don't think you're asking too much. I feel like that was the writer's shrugging. It was also weird that when his hook pierced the very obviously plaster crocodile, that like green gas came billowing out. I didn't get that at all.
I think it was just sand kicking up, wasn't it?
I thought it was gas. It looks like gas.
It looks very vaporous.
Croco gas, yeah.
Croco gas.
Is this a good point to go over Claudette lines really quick? Because I feel like they might come up.
Yes. Do you have some?
Well, we went over the best one.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So when he says, like, he stabs the hook into the crocodile and gas comes... You're right, gas does come out. Yeah. Now I know what you're talking about. He says, what's happening? What does this mean? And that's a weird thing to say. And, like, I call it a Claudette line because of that character from The Room, which is a famous bad movie that I feel like I shouldn't need to explain in depth here, but, like...
Watch it if you haven't.
If you, like, watch The Room and pay attention to this character Claudette's lines, a lot of her lines, on one viewing, I kind of... thought may have just been something that like a script editor wrote in because they were just frustrated at what's happening, so they were just their own personal objections of
who,
like,
is this character,
who are all these characters,
how many people come in out of this kitchen each day,
how many people come in out of this kitchen
or something,
every
like
day?
Does anyone here have a job?
She has all these lines that are like valid questions that you would ask, like, my screenwriting teacher would have written on my script.
There's a lot of things that would have been written in, and Tommy Wiseau just saw the script and was like, hey, what's great lines?
So
just
trying to give him a character.
By the way, Brendan, flawless Tommy Wiseau.
I'm pretty great.
Impression.
So yeah, there. I feel like all movies have some of these lines where I like, it's exactly what I'm thinking.
Yes.
And what any person reading the script should be thinking, like, what does this mean?
I hope Tommy Wiseau heard this and just, like, saluted us from afar.
I hope so, too.
Like, thank you for immortalizing
I really want
my movie,
Claudette,
finally.
The Claudette line theory to take off.
I want to...
Script editor is
talk real quick, then, about just Julia Roberts, I think, is the last thing that I just want.
Okay.
How, I guess...
I have to say, I've at least... you guys have a lot of shade you want to throw at Julia Roberts.
It's not
like,
shade. We are going to just straight up go like, in on Julia Roberts.
I don't just throw shade because I don't acknowledge that as a thing.
I don't acknowledge it either. I feel bad about saying it already. I regret. I read everything.
I love shame. But I'm so happy. Poor shade.
I know that I objectively she's not good in this movie, but I feel like I just, on top of everything else, I have no energy left.
No, that's
to have disdain for Julia
Roberts.
About,
it's the, you know, maybe it's the thing that bugs you the least in this movie.
I want to start with something that's not really her fault, and that's her wig. It is so bad. I don't understand how that made it through all the levels of hair and makeup and wardrobe, and like, did this really go by Spielberg, and he was like, great, put that right on the soundstage? No, looks really bad. Her costume was not great. The wings were super fakey.
It's a very unflattering.
No, it's a sack, right? Like, it's a sack, pretty
tunic,
much.
Yeah.
You have Julia Roberts, who's a very beautiful actress. She's like 23 at the time. Like, and Tinkerbell is sort of historically like
a sex pot.
Yeah, like a bit of a tarted up little character. So yeah. Like, well, I don't understand what the thought process was behind, you know,
she's wearing a
dumping a potato sack on her
beige tunic.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you have to sexualize her, but like, one, it does feel out of character for Tinkerbell to be sort of so tomboyish.
I wonder if they're like, let's give Julia Roberts a break, and that's why they put her in that like Cinderella gown toward the end.
Well, isn't that like why she becomes big? Because she just wanted a scene to do with Robin Williams.
Probably.
She was apparently like really unpleasant. Like there's like all the stories on how they called her Tinker Hell because she was just like hard to work with. But like, and I don't know, she comes off. I think she comes off pretty bad in this movie. I don't know if it's the fact that, you know, she was recording on a blue screen the entire time, so she couldn't interact with anyone. And I'm not an actor. I don't know how that works, but I've heard it's very challenging, and I believe that it is. But maybe that's what makes her seem so stagey, but she seems like the head cheerleader, like being the lead in the school play. Like, she just has all this, like, fake, you can hear the fakeness in her voice anytime she says anything. It's very clearly like, oh boy, Peter, we're going to have adventures and we're going to play with the lost boys. And it's just like, it's a line reading.
As soon as she comes fluttering into that room and, yeah, just starts oh boying at Peter, my eyes just rolled out of my skull. It was so over the top.
Pick those back up.
It was so over the top and not in a fun way. It was just sort of like you said, head cheerleader. She's trying out for drama club. And gosh darn it, we're going to put on a show. I could just feel the effort so much that I found it off-putting. I should also note, though, I'm a little biased. I don't really buy Julia Roberts in most things. I do agree she's good in other movies, but this, I just was not buying her in it.
Guys, I like Pretty Woman. Not gonna
we
lie.
All like Pretty Woman. Have you ever seen the scene where
I don't like Pretty
he
Woman.
Holds out the jewelry and she goes to take it and then he snaps it shut and she screams? Isn't it a delight?
No, I've never seen it.
It's a delight.
It's a delight.
Did you know that she had an assistant on set with her whose job it was to clean her feet all the time?
No.
And that assistant grew up to be Quentin Tarantino.
Are you for real?
No, I made that up.
Oh my god.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Brendan, the wheels just like clicked into place in that moment. I was like,
but what if it was, right?
That would be amazing. Oh, actually, on that note, there is one factoid I want to throw out there.
Sure.
Behind the three Pirates of the Caribbean movies, this is the next highest grossing. So this is number four.
For pirate
for all pirate movies. Yeah. Yes, movies of all time. No, but pirate movies.
Well, yeah, like I had said before,
what about
pirate
Black
movies
Sail?
Don't make
I know
money.
That's not a movie, but like,
what?
That's a TV show about pirates.
Oh.
People said that pirates don't sell, but like, people like pirates.
They don't make money. The
I
movies
like
don't make money.
No, why don't they make money?
Because they just don't.
They don't.
I don't know why. I mean, it could just be a case
Research
the movies
must
are all
be
bad.
Done. Why are we researching stem cells? We could be talking about why we can't sell a pirate movie. Maybe.
Yeah, sit down, Michael J. Fox.
Make pirates great again.
I do want to make pirates great again, because I love pirates.
We all do. Everyone loves a good
Whatever
pirate.
They do that bullshit, Pirates versus Ninjas, it's not even a contest. Pirates. They have guns. They have guns and they cheat.
That's true.
That's true. Okay.
I mean, frankly, ninjas cheat too.
Yeah. All right. So anyway.
Anyhow, having covered a lot of the crap, I think we should talk about what we would fix in this movie.
Yeah.
Chris, why don't you start?
As the most sympathetic at this table.
Sure.
To this movie, the most sympathetic to this
Let's
movie.
Let's go with that.
So if I was going to do up this movie, my fix is to take it in a Pan's Labyrinth Guillermo del Toro direction, and you could still maintain a visually captivating fantasy kind of plot line while also bringing in a really interesting way a lot of the dark stuff they're trying to touch upon, like strife between a negligent father and his children, the weird sexual tension inherent in being a boy who never grows up to return to find that the girl you had a semi-romantic relationship with is now, like, 90. I feel like that would be a really interesting frame to kind of redo this movie in. I normally go on and on about my fix and what it would be, but it's really short. Go in a Guillermo del Toro kind of Pan's Labyrinth direction. Boom.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, I just got it.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Accidental pun.
Your idea.
Lee.
It was your idea. Sorry.
Go ahead, Lee.
I'm basically treating this as if someone approached me and said, we want to do a movie where Peter Pan grows up, because everything about this movie I would almost entirely change. Like, I would probably, like, you're basically going to give me the raw concept that I'm going to tear everything that's in Hook apart and ignore most of it and make my own movie, because...
Go for it.
Yeah, I am more attached to the Peter Pan, like, concept in general of this character who, the eternal child who won't grow up. And the fact that you're going to, it's compelling to you when you say, like, oh, we want to do a story where he does grow up, and why does he grow up, and what happens because of it. So my story would, I think, mostly focus on the fact that Neverland is sort of symbolic of escapism and having adventures, and, like, every kid wants that. And so, like, every kid can and will go there when they sleep or whenever they need to, because it's a place where they can escape and be kids. So, like, what happens when Peter Pan leaves it? Probably nothing good, because he seems to be, like, an important part of this world.
Right.
A
pillar of that world.
Yeah, and it's weird, too, because, like, in the origin of Peter Pan, you already have that he wasn't always around to be there. It also seems like whenever he goes there, Neverland is more alive than it is when he's not there. So, like, I don't know what it means that he's not an inherent part of it. He seems to have come there afterwards, but what I would focus on is how he did leave and grow up, and ever since then, like, both Neverland and the real world have been a little fucked up because of it, because kids don't have the same, you know, avenues of escape that they do.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, you know, he's sort of like Santa Claus in that, like, he was a symbol to kids, and he's not around anymore, and so therefore there's a lot missing. And so there's something else, like, you know, however, if he has kids, which he can have kids if he wants, I just don't want the movie to be about, like, a neglectful father, because I think that's a little, that becomes the story, and I don't want that to be the story. But I think that something drags him back to Neverland, whether it be the fact that, you know, Tinkerbell keeps sending Lost Boys back.
Ooh, I like that.
Well, I had this idea last night that, like, Tinkerbell does send Lost Boys back, and they're like, oh, go get Peter Pan. And it happens a lot, but they keep forgetting, because they leave Neverland and they forget, like Peter Pan did. And they grow up. So there's all these, like, older guys that, like, were former Lost Boys that forgot. And then maybe you have one kid who actually does find Peter Pan. So he's still, like, a little 12-year-old boy that finds, like, a 50-year-old Peter Pan. And it's like, oh, my God, you got to go back with me.
Right.
The other things I would change is that I would have Peter Pan, when he remembers who he is, revert to an actual child. Because I do think it just looks silly for an older, like, weird guy to be dressed in a tunic and tights and, like... If you can't look like the symbol of childhood, then you should probably just have a child do that. And I don't know. I kind of like, because there's an inherent tragedy in Peter Pan, in the original source material, because he's a tragic figure to some extent, because he's a child and he wants to always have adventures. He doesn't want to grow up. But he meets Wendy and he wants, like, more things from Wendy than he understands fully. And she wants more from him, but he can't give her those things. And he doesn't want to, like, sacrifice what he has to get the things that he wants from Wendy, you know, which is obviously, like, a more fulfilling relationship or whatever. And so he, you know, and then it has that ending where he finds Wendy grown up and he's like, oh, what happened? Like, I don't understand, because I'm a stupid kid that keeps forgetting that people grow up. So I would want to play with that in Hook, too, where I don't know how I would do it. One of the thoughts was that if he did have kids, that he would revert to being a kid again. He would become Peter Pan. And he does forget that he has kids. And maybe he just thinks that his kids are now, like, other lost boys or other lost children. And then a decision has to be made as to whether or not he wants to stay and be Peter Pan or forget that he has kids, or if he wants to go back with his kids and then forget everything else again.
Right.
But I think that in this universe of Peter Pan, I think that, like, someone has to stay and be Peter Pan. If it's not him, then I almost think that, like, it should be one of his kids, maybe. Or
someone takes on the mantle.
Yeah, someone has to become Peter Pan, which he gives his sword to Thudpup, but I don't think that means that, like, he's the new Peter Pan. I think that just means, like, you're in charge now. And I think it has to have an element of sadness and tragedy and sacrifice for it to work fully. So that's why I would say he either has to stay and become Peter Pan, and his kids can still see him because they're kids, so they'll have him while he's Peter Pan, or one of his kids becomes Peter Pan or something. I just think it needs that element in there.
Like we said before, I have a lot of affinity for the source material of Peter Pan. I like what you're doing, but I think you could probably stick within sort of what this movie is setting up and deliver something that's sort of satisfying. So my big thing for one is that Neverland is sort of small in this movie, and it's sort of a sausage fest. So because it is established, I think that Shane Barry has said that girls are too smart to become Lost Boys because, like, boys are idiots and they fall out of their strollers, but, like, basically, girls just don't. So, like, that's why there are no girls in Neverland, which I guess, you know, at least you've made a rule about it. But, like, on the other hand, it creates a very sort of one-sided equation. So what I was sort of thinking is, in lieu of Rufio, whom I find just to sort of be a very unsatisfying 90s sort of chap, I think that after Peter left, what should have happened is that Tiger Lily stepped up and became in charge of the Lost Boys. And I think that would, one, create a female presence in this movie, which is desperately needed, and two, also allows the Indians to show up. So it's a sort of complicated thing how there are no Indians in this movie. And you can't, you know, how do you portray these characters who are mentioned as being in the books is just sort of these stereotypical. I don't blame them for sort of just sidestepping that entire thing, but on the other hand, it does create just a very sort of a bland kind of Neverland. So I think it would be perfectly fine to have Tiger Lily be a representation of that tribe. Maybe something happened. Maybe Hook has mentioned that he's killed Lost Boys and Indians, and so maybe he killed a lot of her tribe, and now she's sort of hiding with the Lost Boys and sort of became their de facto leader. Also, I am... It's very confusing to me about how much Hook knows about Peter Pan prior to bringing him to Neverland, because Smee shows up with his dental records and a signed affidavit from Tinkerbell saying that this is Peter Pan.
Yeah.
But there's no explanation as to, like, how he got these things or if he's been following them, because they say, Maggie says that a mean man in the window took Jack's baseball, and it's just, I don't know what was happening there. So really... I think what should have happened is that, one, in this version, he only has one kid, and it's probably going to be Jack, because I think the father-son thing is something that Spielberg seems to really just enjoy. But it's going to be Jack, and what happens is that he is captured by Smee under the assumption that this is Peter Pan, that he sees this kid there who looks kind of like what he thinks Peter Pan used to look like, and says, aha, like, I found him. I found Peter Pan. We're bringing him back, and we're going to do this again. Hook wants his revenge. And then, of course, he gets him there, and he finds out, no, this is not Peter Pan, this is his kid. And Hook goes through sort of what I talked about earlier, where he starts to sort of see this as a way to sort of, you know, have some sort of fulfillment in this stagnant Neverland where, you know, nothing is the same anymore. And so Tinkerbell has to come and bring Peter Pan back so that he can rescue his kid. I think it simplifies things only having just the one. I think it gives a little bit more emotional heft in that case. And it just seems like a bit of a cleaner pathway for them all. And there you go.
Nice.
Yeah. Lee's nodding.
I'm nodding. I'm sorry. I forgot that I have to verbalize.
She's audibly nodding.
If I stuck with the two kids thing, I would actually do more with the girl, and I probably would candidate her as the Peter Pan character in my version, because I think she's more representative of what Peter Pan, like, I think Jack is just kind of like a sad boy.
He is.
The girl, Maggie, is sort of more full of hope and, like, vivacious.
She has
fight in her. I actually think if you did, like, the Peter Pan, the grown-up Peter Pan is sort of sad and, like, a downtrodden, that it would be a nice contrast if his kid was Peter Pan in attitude.
Yeah,
like,
that's good.
If he did have, like, an upbeat kid.
Oh, also, I would cast David Bowie as Peter Pan.
David Bowie. I'm struggling, like, racking my brain for other, like...
Yeah, it's a little hard because actors. I'm trying to think, like, who was a viable actor at that time. When I was a kid, like, I don't remember who the hell was, like, a box office draw
at
this point.
For the love of God, someone British.
Hold on. Yeah, that's the other thing, too. It's needlessly complicated that Peter was... taken by Wendy, who lives in England, given to a family in America, and yet somehow ends up with Moira still.
She should have raised Peter, for fuck's sake.
But then it's also, I guess the point is then you, like, raise him alongside this girl, and then he decides to, like...
But it's not like, I don't know, it's not like Wendy, the middle-aged normal human, would have been like, clearly they're gonna get married someday, because, like, kids have crushes all the time.
Yeah, I guess
even
so.
If you do, I don't know about there being legal... problems with wanting to marry
No, there's not legal problems. I'm just saying it's just in the sense that, like,
it's a bit,
you know,
weird.
Yeah, you're like, sort of raised as like a brother and sister. So I guess maybe it was something that, you know, I guess maybe if Wendy was the one raising him, and given that presumably Moira does not live with her,
yeah,
like maybe the sort of thing where like they see each other on weekends or something as yeah. their kids. Yeah,
they could have done it, but she should have stayed close by.
It's just so implausible that they formed a relationship despite the fact that they were living on different continents.
I have a candidate. It's a British actor, but they're more of an actor of now than they were then.
Sure.
I'm just putting it out there, Tilda Swinton.
No.
She's androgynous. She's amazing.
But she can't be Peter Pan.
Huh?
I'm saying I think she can be other androgynous characters, but she can't be Peter Pan. Who was I saying she could be? I can't remember.
Mary Martin.
No. God damn it. Stop the Mary Martin references. There was some other thing.
Tom Hanks and Kevin Kline were also up for this role at one point, too.
I'm just going to say Kevin Kline, and then I immediately down bet.
Yeah, me too. I don't know how
I did the same thing where I was like, maybe. No.
Yeah.
It's he's sort of Robin Williams adjacent in his sort of attitude.
Especially at the time.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like Tom Hanks was probably just talked about
Dave,
because of Big.
I had a Dave flashback.
I was thinking Tom Hanks because like he was in Big, and they were like, oh, he did a story where he played a boy.
can't not picture like Tom Hanks' like manic laughter like in that movie. I can't.
That would have been unsettling. Like,
oh, yeah. Would you recommend that people watch
Carrie
this movie?
Ewells.
Carrie Elwes?
Sorry, Elwes. I don't know how to say his name.
Yeah, it's Elwes.
There's not a U in that entire name.
But it's one of those, it's what we talked, like, names where my brain just filters it out. And I, a child.
Like, ew, as in, like, yeah, a ram.
As a child, like, I saw him in The Princess Bride, and I decided to call him Carrie Ewes. That's it. That's the one I would want.
Yeah, I could see
he
that.
Won. Yeah.
I could see that being a thing. So,
what I recommend.
Going back to it, yeah, now that we've had to watch this movie, should other people
have seen it?
Right, that's the thing I feel too. I can't like recommend this to anyone because you've probably seen it, right?
I would say.
But I have a niece now, I will probably try to keep her from seeing this movie.
See, that's interesting because I asked someone, one of the people who was asking, like, have you watched this movie recently? And they said, yes, it's a movie I watch with my nephews, and it's through that lens that I love it. So I guess my suggestion in terms of what I recommend you watch this, I guess to kind of bring it back to what Lee had said before, if you're looking for just straight entertainment and you're not going to pay attention to like the frills and details, you're going to probably be just fine. But if you are going to be paying attention to that stuff, I would just stay away.
See, I feel like I wouldn't show this to like my fictitious niece or nephew when I could just show them Peter Pan.
That's the thing. I would be horrified if my niece's first exposure to Peter Pan was Hook.
Yeah.
Like, that's because they're going to form an attachment to the first one they see, and that's so, it's so wrong.
Right.
They're going to love all the wrong things about it.
Right. I feel like you could watch
it's not objective.
You could watch the Disney Peter Pan, you could watch the one in 2003, which are both very good.
The 2003 one is
it's a good adaptation.
Good.
Yeah, like, it's well acted. Jason Isaacs is
and
very good.
There's the deleted scene where they kept the depressing ending.
Yeah,
really?
I remember about that. Yeah,
yeah. They kept the ending where he goes back and sees one up Monday, and it's so good.
It's a very good adaptation of Peter Pan. It's probably the best live, which I guess is not saying much, but it's probably the best live action adaptation of Peter Pan, I think.
And they cast that with relative unknowns in a lot of the bigger roles.
Yeah.
Like, Pan wasn't a big one.
Well, I mean,
Wendy
for the kids, yeah.
And the only weird choice was that he wasn't wearing a shirt.
Yeah.
It's a really weird choice.
That was odd.
It's a strange costume
for a child to
be wearing.
Would you say it's as strange as the shot of Rufio as framed by,
by the
Robin Williams'
Peter
upper
Pan.
Thighs and crotch?
Yes, I would, Chris.
Okay, great. I just wanted to check.
All right, well, thank you guys for sticking with us as we slog our way through the brightly colored mud pits that is Hook. We will be back with a mini episode in, I think, about 2 weeks with a little more information about what's coming next and what we will be drinking while we subject ourselves to it. Until then, I'm Brendan Drischler.
I'm Chris Revelle.
And I'm Lee Delahanty.
Happy viewings.